Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome to Who What Wear with Hillary Kerr, your direct line to the designers, stylists, beauty experts, editors, and tastemakers who are shaping the ever-evolving world of fashion. I'm your host, Hillary Kerr, and today on the show, I'm speaking with the brilliant bridal designer behind Daniel Frankel's studio, Danielle Hirsch. Danielle's designs are known in the fashion community far and wide for not only creating imaginative, intricate, and masterful bridal collections, but also for driving the entire category forward in her execution of marrying nostalgia and tradition with modernity. She's here to talk about designing custom gowns in her New York atelier, drawing inspiration from the brides themselves, and all of the things to consider when searching for your perfect dress. It's all coming up on Who What Wear. Danielle, welcome to the show. I am so excited that you're here because you, I don't know if you know this, but I'm making it official, you are the go-to designer for fashion girls who want to look incredibly chic at their weddings. Extremely excited to talk to you about everything bridal and to get your take on what's happening in the industry and pretty much everything. So I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit about the current collection and the inspiration you're drawing from at the moment, because it feels very progressive and thoughtful and directional and forward. And these are not words I usually use to describe anything having to do with weddings.
Thank you, first of all, for having me. But also, it's awesome to hear as a designer that people respect and can identify your work and see it for what you feel like it is.
Yep.
This collection specifically was a lot of fun. Whenever anyone says, like, what's your inspiration every season? I'm not one of those designers that categorizes every season with a new inspiration. My inspiration is always the same thing. It's always my brides and the people I am working with. I'm very involved in the fittings when people come in. So I'm constantly learning more about women and what they want and hearing from their mouths directly. And that's what's inspiring the collection. And as we're growing as a business, I have more brides. So I feel like every collection gets stronger because I'm more in tune with what's happening.
Well, your focus group is giving you all of the important details, right?
Exactly.
And I think that's something that's so important because, you know, at the end of the day, like, it's a business. And so you have to take part in that feedback loop. And it shouldn't be something that I think anyone follows completely dogmatically, because you have to have vision at the end of the day. But it's the way that you interpret that feedback. It's the way that you address those concerns or desires or whatever it is that ends up being so incredibly inspirational.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for designers in general, whether you're designing a piece of furniture or a piece of jewelry or a gown or whatever, it's easy to design something that is wild and beautiful and kind of over the top and crazy. But I think what the real challenge is for a designer is creating something that somebody actually wants to wear, a real person. And this is probably the biggest retail purchase of their life. So it's thinking about what does that person actually want and making it beautiful, but it's about the realistic part of it, you know?
It can't just be conceptual.
Exactly. Yes.
I also want to talk about the fact that you were the first bridal designer to participate in the CFDA Fashion Fund.
Yes.
In 2019, which, as if my words weren't enough, that is really indicative of how forward thinking and modern your designs are and how they sort of transcend category. So I'm curious about why you decided to focus your brand around bridal and what makes the perfect dress, in your opinion, because I imagine that you're not just thinking about like what's timeless and or, you know, what's classic, which the category can sometimes fall into that.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you say the perfect dress because the answer to that is different for every person. So every season when we're like wrapping up design, I have my whole team sit around the board and I say, okay, you're a bride and you are getting married in South France. You're getting married in New York City Hall. You're getting married in Hudson Valley. You're getting married in Malibu or whatever it is, all these locations across the world. And then we give like, here's how many people are coming to your wedding. And I make everybody choose from the collection, what are they wearing to that wedding? Because every season, I want to make sure that I have the perfect dress for every kind of woman, because that's where you're successful. You're not just selling one gown. You're selling a whole season of things. And one woman is only buying one dress. One woman is not necessarily buying five dresses, which is how, you know, most ready-to-wear designers think, you know?
Right.
They think of it as like, you're going to buy a top, you're going to buy a bottom and a dress, and you're kind of outfitting the woman. I mean, for us, we do that in a way where we say, okay, there's something for her rehearsal, there's something for her ceremony and reception or whatever. But, you know, you have to think of every person as an mm-hmm. individual and what are they going to want to wear, but also location matters. So we try to think about that and then make the perfect dress. It's also, I mean, we see all different kinds of body types and religions and like, I've been so educated, actually, in different kind of, like, cultures now and what people do, which is really, really special. So I know that that's probably not the answer to the question.
No, I love it, though, because I was curious about whether there was, like, every season there was that dress where you thought, like, okay, this is going to be, like, the clear winner, or if you actually thought about all of those different locations and things.
Because
I have to say, I'm not like a super wedding person. Uh-huh. I tried to make my husband elope. That didn't work out. But I realized going through the process, I was never someone who dreamed about my own wedding. And so when I was looking at dresses, a lot of it was, well, I love that, but that's not appropriate for where we're having it. That's
exactly.
not appropriate for like an outdoor ceremony at, you know, sunset in Palm Springs. And that was great because I didn't have my heart set on something.
Yeah.
So I could kind of go with the flow in that way. But it really is true. Like what you want to wear for a church wedding in Chicago is going to be very different than, you know, outdoors in the south of France. So
yes.
It's so lovely that you think about all of those different locations and levels of formality and religion, customs, all of that stuff. I love that.
Yeah. The one funny thing, though, is when it comes to weather, and if a girl loves a gown and it has long sleeves or whatever, and she's going to, she doesn't care. If that's the dress, she is wearing it in the dead of summer. It's so interesting. You will never change somebody's mind if they are set on something and it's so like not appropriate for their wedding. Does not matter. That's their gown.
That's so interesting. I mean, the heart wants what the heart wants, I
exactly.
guess, right?
Yeah. And I would do the same thing, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, like, who cares if you're cold or hot? I mean, that's like the least of the issues, especially
exactly.
if you are in love with everything else. So one of the things that I really admire about your gowns is all of the details. I mean, the pleating and the draped sleeves and the way that the ribbon will cascade in a certain way and the most delicate tulle that looks like it's made out of cotton candy or like that fairies sewed it. I mean, legitimately like stuff that seems almost illustrated because it's so thoughtfully done. What details do you like best about wedding gowns? Which ones do you find most special? Is it dictated by the fabric? Is it dictated by how you think something's going to photograph? Like, how do you think about that?
I'm very, very technique driven. So, which means, you know, I take a piece of fabric and I want to see what can this do. So a lot of it is about the content of the fabric because, you know, silk will do one thing and poly will do another. People think poly is a bad word, but actually it's your friend when you're trying to do things like pleating and whatever. But you don't want to tell brides that because they think poly and they're like, nope, it takes a lot of education to understand what fabrics can do. And for me, it's about what's going to make something that's like super textural and tactile, because at the end of the day, we make fairly simple gowns and it's really what we do to the fabric that makes them super special. So I'm always trying to push what can we do with this fabric and how can we drape with it in a way that's a little bit newer than what we've done before. So we're always playing around. Like we have a whole room of just like little things that we've tried to test with the fabric, and some work and some don't. And when one works, we like really run with it. And when it doesn't, we don't and we move on. But yeah, I'm really inspired by nature and natural elements. So one of the necklines, for example, that we did last season was inspired by a wilted flower. And we literally called the neckline like a wilting neckline because it literally looks like it's kind of like done and flopped over, and wilting is the only word really that's appropriate for it. And so those little like key words sometimes are also what inspires us to kind of do with the fabric and figure out what really is working and making something unique.
I mean, that just speaks to the amount of like technical design that you have to do, thinking about like, how is this fabric going to hold up?
Yeah.
And also, by the way, like weddings are long.
Yes.
So what is the longevity of this? I mean, there's just so much to take into consideration that I think obviously any designer wants their garment to look as great 12 hours later as it did the moment it went on the person. But like you have a really serious level of expectation. Do you have like any sort of testing process to make sure something's going to hold up? Like I have this, all of a sudden in my head, I have this vision of like the way that they test cars, like doing that with wedding dresses.
Yes, we do and we don't. So the first thing is like we're constantly testing the gowns just by having them in our showroom because they're getting tried on every day. So we do see how they wear and we have to replace them actually every few weeks. So yeah, we definitely have to like test them. Our most beautiful fabric, actually, we've had so many issues and we've gone back and forth with our mill in Italy so many times just because it was so fragile. So anything would like nick it. And we were like, we can't give this to a bride because it's just too fragile. We would go back and back and back. And finally, we got it to a place where not only was it the perfect color, because that was also the thing, like we needed it to be less green and less gray. And like, you know, so there was tons of lab dips going back and forth because ivory is also like very specific. But then we also got it to a place where the fibers were stronger and it was just less fragile because we do need it to kind of hold up throughout the night. But I will say this, that by the end of the night, your gown should be trashed because if it's not, then you had the worst time at your wedding. Do you know what I mean? Like, you should have a black wedding dress by the end.
Oh, man, I love that. That's true. Okay, so I want to hear more about the atelier and how brides can come to you. So obviously, like, there are retailers that carry your dresses like Net-a-Porter, but you also design custom gowns as well at your atelier in New York, or people come and try on gowns as well. So what does the process look like if a bride-to-be reaches out to you? Like, what are the steps? What should she know?
Sure. So you can book an appointment literally on our website to come to the studio to try on gowns and meet with someone from our team. And you will have an hour alone by yourself in our studio.
That's luxurious.
Yeah, it's truly an experience because you have the attention of the whole team. You're working with one person, but if she needs to pull someone from production, they're right in the back, or a pattern maker or a sample maker or somebody for technical reasons or whatever, you're really getting that attention. And I want every bride to come in and feel like they are really heard, and we sit with them and we chat. What is it that you're really looking for? And we have them pre-select and tell us before they even come in the direction that they're going in. And we try to get as much information before they even walk through the door. And then it's just a process of, have you tried on gowns before? Is this your first time? Because that's a huge thing as well.
What are the differences?
I think that the women who have tried on gowns before come in a little bit more educated. they know what silhouettes they want. They know what's working for them and what's not. It's not a bad thing when someone's coming in and hasn't tried it on before. It just means that they might not be further along in the process.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's so rare that somebody walks in, tries on a gown for the first time ever, and then that's it, you know?
Right.
So we meet with our brides. I'm sort of in and out. You know, I try to say hi to as many women as I can. And then they kind of go from there. We send them their selections. We give them all the information. Some people want to come in again, and some people can take home their dress literally that day because we carry our gowns in stock for the most part. There are a few that are made to order, but I try to think of a wedding dress the way that you're thinking about buying anything else, which is that you can walk out the door with it.
That's amazing. So what are questions that brides should be asking you and your team the first time that everyone meets? And then on the flip side of that, do you have questions for them? Because especially if you're doing something custom, because I feel like that has to be a mutual selection process.
Yeah, it's funny. With the custom thing, it's really like dating. You have to see if you're the right designer for somebody because, you know, you're the creative director, but if they're wanting something custom, the bride has to also have some sort of sense of a direction. So we always have her send a mood board before we even get the conversation started of like, what does this look like? And, you know, it's always within the Danielle Frankel aesthetic of things because we want to make sure it's the brand. But there's a back and forth before we even get to sketching because you want to make sure that you're kind of like jiving with the person. And if you're going the custom route, I think people don't realize how much faith they have to have that the final product all comes together in the end because you're going through muslin fittings and it's like building a house. In that there are steps to get there versus like, here's your house. It's a gown. So you think like, okay, here's a sketch. Now it gets made. But most people don't experience the design process. They just experience the end product of things. But when you're doing a custom gown, it is about the process. It's not just about that end product. So I would say if someone wanted to go custom, it's really important that this woman asks herself, do I have faith in the unknown? That's a really important part of it.
I mean, that's, yeah. And also, like, the other thing is like, are we on the same page?
Yes.
Because
yes.
To that point, like, I've interviewed lots of designers and stylists over the years, and they all say, like, if we're asking for something custom, you have to ask for a custom version of something that's in the designer's wheelhouse.
Exactly.
Like, you can't go to someone who's known for, like, really tailored pieces and want something, like, super ethereal and romantic and dreamy. Like, that's just not what they're known for. That's not what they do. Like, someone else is going to be the right fit there.
Right.
Okay. So tell me about lead time. So on one hand, you could walk in, find a dress, literally take it home that day, which is amazing. When you're building something from scratch, how long does that process take in a sort of perfect world?
So it really depends on what the gown is. Mm-hmm. It could take anywhere from 6 to 9 months. However, if you were like, I need this in 3 months, we could do anything. It just also matters where we are in the studio, how busy it is. So it depends when you're asking. It depends what it looks like.
Lots of variables.
Yes, exactly.
And also, I would imagine, too, right now with the supply chain, like it also depends on like when does that fabric arrive or whatever it may be.
Yeah. And we try to use the same fabrics every season so that it's fluid, it's sustainable, and it's easier for us because we don't have to test things like what you were asking before about like testing fabrics and everything. Like these are our core fabrics. We know what they do. We know how to use them. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. I like that. It's like you've tested out your kit. Like you know these are all going to work together. It's going to be fine.
Yes.
So when someone comes to you and has, let's say it's their very first time, they have no idea what they want. They just want some guidance. Like how do you help someone when they're just open to it all?
It's a lot harder, actually, to work with somebody.
I would imagine.
Yeah, because if someone came to me and they were like, I need to wear a bra that's non-negotiable, it's a lot easier for us to direct them into styles that will work for them because we know the ones that have either built-in bra or bra friendly or whatever. So when someone's very open, I think that, you know, we give them anything from an A-line gown to a slip dress and everything in between and sort of edit from there. What I do tell women is that nobody knows the dress that you didn't wear. So no one's ever going to say like, oh, but she should have chosen the other one because
yeah.
You're only getting one. And so if you can edit yourself down to the one that you like the most, it's great because you don't need to like two, you know, you just need to like one.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. So how do you think about color? Because not every bride wants to wear, you know, something in the white family or ivory or whatever it may be. How do you work through on deciding the right color? And also, how do you work through colors even in the white family?
Absolutely. It's funny because here we have, I don't know, 20 shades of ivory because you have to build the dress with different shades to make it look expensive. Things tend to look a little cheaper when they're just one shade of ivory. So you have to build in the ivories differently. And I actually like it when you have a gown and there's a part of it that's kind of like optic and a part of it that's a little creamier because it provides texture, but your like eye can follow it in a way that doesn't seem flat. It's interesting. I actually struggle as a designer with color in general. People always ask me, so when are you coming out with a ready-to-wear collection or whatever? And it scares me because I have been a bridal designer even before I launched this collection for a long time. And so I think in ivory. I don't think in color, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And we do have a few styles that are in
you
color.
Do.
Yeah. And those to me are exciting because they're very deliberate. Whereas like in general, I don't think of colored wedding gown, although I think it's actually super cool to wear a little bit of color in your wedding dress. It does not come naturally to me to think of things in terms of color.
That is interesting and honest. And I love that. Like, we're not all good at everything all the time.
Yeah.
And for you just to be like, it's just not my lane right now, that's very fair.
Yeah. My friend Christopher John Rogers, on the other hand,
yes!
That's a kaleidoscope. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Okay, so can we talk about accessories and very specifically like jewelry? Because
sure.
I feel like that is a piece of it that I know when going through my own wedding, like as someone who has worked in fashion, you know, my entire career, just like the level of accessorizing and jewelry and this and that, like I understand why people hire bridal stylists,
yes.
Especially if you have a bunch of different events around it. There's a lot to it. So I'm curious about how you think about jewelry, what you're loving now,
uh-huh.
And like what fashion girls, aka your clients, are wearing for wedding jewelry right now. And do they ever surprise you? Does your client ever just like, you see the photos from the wedding, you're like, wow, I didn't realize they were going to do that with that, but that's amazing.
Yes, sometimes. A lot of the times people will bring their jewelry to their fittings. I love it when someone wears some kind of family jewelry, a little token here or there, whether it's like your grandmother's like little strand of pearls and you're wearing it as your anklet or something cool like that. To me, that's taking something that's nostalgic and maybe special to you and wearing it in a new way, bringing it new life. For our jewelry, it's exclusively pearls for the most part in, you know, metal. And I try to think of it as something that pairs next to the gown. You have to really think about what is your gown and then you think about your jewelry. Like, I'm a huge believer in like investing in good jewelry for sure, but I also am a believer in wearing that jewelry. So to me, if you're going to buy something, you should buy something that you will wear again and again and again. Like for me, I actually won't purchase a piece of jewelry if it's not something I'll wear every day. And to my own wedding, this earring, I wore it to my wedding just because like—
Love that.
Yeah, it's like, it's my everyday jewelry. I personally don't feel like it needs to change if it's something that like— I've invested in, just I want to wear it.
Same. It's always the same stuff.
Always.
But it's also like those are the pieces that you love.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's sort of that thing about like, don't save all your nice stuff for fancy occasions,
yeah,
because then you never get to see it. And this thing that you've spent so much,
yeah,
money on.
Yes.
And then it's also like you're not going to wear your wedding dress necessarily like on a weekly basis, but you can still have, like to your point, like you have a little bit of your wedding with you right now. And
yeah,
that's kind of amazing.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay. Can we talk about veils? Because
sure.
I know you have some. What are your thoughts on them? Who are they for? What should someone know about them? Because I love a veil. They are a great moment. I did not feel it was appropriate for me at that exact moment, but I just, the drama of them, oh, I just love it.
Yeah. So the way I think about veils is two part, because I want to be very realistic with the clients and like, you know, do you have to wear a veil for family reasons, right, religious reasons, whatever. So that, like, once you get that out of the way, the other thing that I tell brides is this is the only time ever that you will wear a veil. So if you've ever had like a little bit of a feeling that I'm a veil person and you want that moment, now's the time. You're never doing it again unless it's a Halloween party and you're dressing up as a bride. Like, it's just, you're never wearing a veil again.
That's amazing.
So is that something that you're going to regret later, that you didn't have your moment? Now, I should not be one to talk, because literally, I think it was like 10 hours before my wedding, I like cut a piece of tulle and threw it on my head. I was like, this is my veil. My mother was freaking out. And I did have to wear a veil.
I love it. So is there anything that people should think about in terms of like volume or silhouette or length or any of that? Like, are there things that are more flattering or less flattering depending on your height or whatever it may be?
I think it depends on your gown, actually. That should be the deciding factor of what the veil looks like. I think if you have a super intricate gown, the veil should be fairly simple. I don't love when the veil is like this thing that is a part of the dress that matches like perfectly. I like when things are a little bit mismatched and weren't made for each other.
It's sort of like the equivalent of like, do you have a matching bedroom set where like the headboard matches the dresser, matches the nightstand?
Yes.
Like, you could, but generally speaking, like having, yes, you know, like a more curated version is perhaps a little more elevated.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, can we talk about wedding shoes? Like,
yeah.
What works in your opinion? What does not work? Do you have any like, oh, this was unexpected, but was actually really great, or something that you said, every time my bride wears one of these, like she hates everything about it?
That's a really good question. So bridal shoes are actually really, really tough. We did a collaboration with Manolo Blahnik, which was, yep, great. And we basically like took our ivory, which is a very specific ivory, and we did the shoes in that ivory because it is hard to match. A lot of, right, times clients will bring shoes in that are way too light or way too dark for our gown specifically. So we wanted to have a shoe option that just matched the gown perfectly. But I would say I hate it when clients have like rhinestones or clasps on their shoes, because if it catches on the fabric, it's just like unnecessary, I think is the way to say it.
Well, it's just one more thing to possibly like trip up or like, you know.
Yeah.
And you want to avoid those things in general, or at least I do. I'm like, whenever it's like a high stress moment or whatever it may be, you just want to get things like,
yeah,
as streamlined, as chill as,
exactly,
possible, leave as little to chance as possible.
Yes. And shoes are something that I like. I think of the brides and I'll put myself in their position and say, what is happening that evening that I need to think about? And with the shoes, it's, can I stay in this shoe all night? If not, am I going to have to change them? And then the length of my dress, how is that going to change? And all of those things, right, are variables. And if you're changing your look, that's totally fine. But, you know, just make sure that it's something that like can withstand the night.
Are there any other little touches that you really love, like special things that you've seen incorporated or, you know, personal touches?
I actually really like it. I know this is not what most people do, but I think it is nice when women come in with their fiancés or show, ooh, their fiancés their gown. I know that that's like bad luck or whatever, but I do think that there is something to be said about like being on the same page about what you will look like as a bride, because you also have to think that whoever you're marrying has envisioned or fantasized what their spouse is going to look like.
Even if they don't claim that, it is a fact.
Exactly. And I think that you have to like value that a little bit for your partner in a way.
Just like they can't show up in something that you have not seen or approved of. Like,
exactly. And I'm not saying that they have to see you in the dress, but I think if you're like, hey, what are things that you like? What are things that you don't like? This is the direction I want to go in. Are you okay with that? I just think it's a good moment to be on the same page, because it is something for them as well.
That is really lovely. And, you know, like thinking about your partner in that moment instead of just you is actually a really sweet way of thinking about all of this.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have recently launched a loungewear. Can
yes.
you call it loungewear? I mean, it's like so much more elevated.
Yeah, it's the way I thought of it was it's pajamas, but you can wear them out. So I don't want to call them pajamas.
They're like external pajamas.
Exactly.
So tell me about the decision to, and there's color involved. There's like this
yes.
really beautiful Arctic blue. There's a very sophisticated brown. I want to call it, it's like cedar brown.
Cedar,
like,
exactly. That's yeah. what we call it. Yes.
So gorgeous. So that's different for you. So tell me what made you think about doing this. I mean, because like doing something with Manola Blahnik, obvious.
Yes.
Like this too also makes sense if you're thinking of
yeah.
you know, some of the events around, but...
So there was a couple things that came to mind with this. The first is that if you meet me, I'm one of those people that loves being comfortable. If I could wear leggings and a sweatshirt every day, I would. So to me, I had to be like, okay, well, what's this fashion equivalent of that? Like, what's acceptable to wear? So there was that. And I was like, okay, the women in the office have to wear something that's our brand. So what are they going to wear to the office that's like all Danielle Frankel? Because obviously we're not walking around in wedding gowns all day, but I do want us to feel like we are a cohesive brand. Those were kind of like the back of the head questions, but really we want to expand our clientele. And we have so many fans of the label that are not getting married, they're not engaged, or, you know, price point doesn't make sense for them or whatever. And to me, two things were really important here. One is that these retailed at a really sharp price. So they're $375 for the set. It's more of like the classic lounge set. And they look like $1 million.
They do.
It's amazing. I'm so happy with the way they came out. But I just thought that, you know, we need to be able to tap into people who already have a relationship with us. So past brides, for example, or like, what are you gifting someone else from our label? Or what's a way to reach people that want the collection that aren't getting married? That was like the number one question. And to me, it wasn't a t-shirt. It wasn't something simpler. It had to make sense for us. But the price point really was something that was huge for me.
I love it. Well, I think it's so well executed. I feel like it makes a great gift as well.
Yeah.
So as you think about new categories and you think about collaborations, like what do you think is next?
I don't know, truthfully. Well, we have some ideas in mind for our next collaboration, for our next, you know, step. Mm-hmm. Also, because we're a small label, to me, it's like inch by inch versus like, I don't know what we're going to look like in 5 years. So I'm pretty much thinking like, what do we look like in 6 months?
Yeah.
So I think collaborations that are fitting are great for us, but I want to be smart about them. The brands have to fit. They have to align. Whatever we are selling has to be part of something to do with the wedding, for sure.
And has to be part of your specific aesthetic universe.
Yes, yes, exactly.
You know, if you're not thinking about color necessarily, why don't you just do the entire line in black? For me, specifically.
It's so funny because wholesalers have been like, hey, we'd love to pick up the brand, but you know, we don't carry bridal, so can we order the collection in color? But we fall into a weird place because what happens if we do make one of our gowns in black? And then that person goes to a wedding and the bride is wearing that style, but in white. So there's all these factors we have to think of when we chat about moving into color. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have retired styles or like?
Yes, we do have retired styles. That is our next project.
Okay. I'll just say you're in line with your customer yet again. So one of the things that I love about your brand, it has such a clear point of view. I feel like just from a civilian point of view, I can legit look at a bride and know if it's you or not. I mean, it's that distinctive. So having that level of a brand DNA, especially like you're still a really new brand in the grand scheme of things, a really new company, I think it's so admirable and so thoughtful and purposeful, and I just love it. So I'm curious about, I know there are lots of up and coming designers who listen to the podcast. What advice would you give someone who is trying to figure out really their point of view? How have you done that so successfully?
So I think as you are becoming aware of yourself as a designer, it's important to think of what motivates you to create and also what is going to make you different, but not in a way that's too different because you want your work to be identifiable. And that's why you said, you know, what were you inspired by your last collection? Like, I don't have this season over season thing where I'm inspired by something different. I'm inspired really by the same thing. And that's why you can identify my work because it's about the brand and it's not about the season.
Yep.
And I think that that's part of our success and you being able to identify our work is that you're able to see the fluid things that are carried over from season to season, whether it's the specific ivory, the pleating, the texture, the buttons, or whatever. If you can keep things consistent, but also move it forward, you know, I always say, like, I'm not reinventing the wheel by any means ever. And I think a lot of young designers feel like in order for them to matter, they have to reinvent the wheel. I think that if you're going to be a designer in a space, you have to think about that space and you have to think, how can I change that space? And that's what will make you that successful designer. That's sort of how I've approached bridal, in that I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm entering a space that is very established. So what point of view am I going to bring to it that's different and identifiable? And if you look at the designs themselves, they're actually not reinventing the wheel at all. I'm just thinking about it as far as bridal's concerned. And that's the newness that you're seeing.
Well, I love it. I am just in such awe of what you have created. Thank you so much for your time. This was so lovely.
Thank you.
A huge thank you to the amazing bridal designer, Danielle Hirsch of Danielle Frankel Studio. Make sure to subscribe to our show wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And while you're there, I'd also be so grateful if you would rate and review us. If you have any guest suggestions or any other feedback, drop us a line at podcast@whowhatwhere.com, or you can find us on social @whowhatwhere. See you next Wednesday on Who What Wear with Hillary Kerr. This episode was produced by Hillary Kerr and Olivia Capoletti. Editing is by Natalie Thurman and Treehouse Recording in Los Angeles, California. Our music is by Jonathan Leahy.